Ever wonder how courts decide if, well, if a voting map is like unfairly weakening the power of a minority group?
Yeah, it's a big deal, right? I mean, it's really crucial in election law.
It is. And today, we're diving deep into a case, a key case that tackles this. Gonzalez versus City of Aurora.
Exactly. And this case, you know, it gives us a really insightful look into vote dilution, you know, those claims that come up under Section 2 of the VRA.
Right, the Voting Rights Act.
Yes, the Voting Rights Act. So we'll be kind of unpacking what this case means for how those claims are actually evaluated.
Okay, so some background for everyone listening. The Gonzalez case, it was a challenge. It was challenging Aurora, Illinois' ward map.
Right.
Latino voters in Aurora felt that the way the city's wards were drawn, it was like it was diluting their voting power.
Right.
Now, Aurora has a significant Latino population.
It does.
It's about 32.6% overall.
Yeah.
But when you look at the voting age citizens, that number is closer to 16.3%. So the city, they use a system. They got 10 wards and then two at-large city council members.
Right. A pretty common setup.
Yeah. And the plaintiffs in this case, they were advocating for creating three what they call Latino effective wards.
Yeah. And that's where it gets really interesting, right? Because you have this inherent tension. You've got a group that's seeking, you know, what they believe is fair representation.
Sure.
And then this runs up against, you know, the legal standards of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which is trying to make sure that everyone has an equal opportunity.
Equally open process.
Exactly. Yeah. Equally open. And the Seventh Circuit, in ruling, they actually quoted themselves from a previous decision. They said, Section 2 requires an electoral process equally open to all, not one that favors any group.
Okay, so let's unpack this for our listeners. So what are the key takeaways that we should be aiming for in this deep dive into Gonzalez versus Aurora?
Well, by the time we're done here, you should have a much clearer understanding of the legal standards that courts use when they're looking at these vote dilution claims. We're going to look at the role of demographic data, which is really important.
Absolutely.
And also, we're going to look at the practical challenges that plaintiffs often face when they're trying to prove these claims, especially in redistricting cases.
Okay, so the plaintiffs in Gonzalez versus Aurora, they were arguing that the city needed to redraw its ward boundaries, right?
Yeah.
They wanted to establish three wards where the Latino population would be concentrated enough that they could probably elect their candidates of choice.
Exactly. And their argument was that with the city's demographics, you know, that 32.6% overall Latino population, it was possible and legally required to create these Latino effective districts.
Right. Even with the lower voting age population.
Exactly.
And this is where that legal framework really comes in, right?
Yes.
It's not simply about, you know, people wanting more representation.
Right.
There are actual legal criteria that have to be met.
Absolutely. The court's analysis in Gonzalez, it relied heavily on what's known as the Gingles test.
Okay.
This comes from a Supreme Court case, Thornburg versus Gingles. And it basically sets out these three conditions that plaintiffs usually need to show to win a Section 2 claim.
Got it.
And you know, what makes these prongs workable legally, it's debated all the time, like proving political cohesion. You know, it can involve really complex statistics and arguments about how much alignment there needs to be.
Right, right. Okay, so let's break down these Gingles prongs.
Sure.
What are they?
Okay, so first, the minority group has to be large enough and geographically compact enough to be a majority in a single member district.
Okay.
Second, the minority group has to be politically cohesive, so meaning they generally vote in a similar way.
Right.
And third, the majority, you know, often the white voting bloc, has to vote together enough to usually defeat the minority's preferred candidate. So that's the three-part test.
Okay, and in Gonzalez, where did the plaintiff's arguments fall short under the Gingles framework?
Well, the Seventh Circuit basically said that the plaintiffs only really showed enough evidence for one ward, Ward 7, mm-hmm. where a majority Latino district that was compact might be possible.
Okay.
They didn't really prove they could make two more districts like that.
Right. So that really emphasizes those voting age population numbers, right?
Yes.
It seems like statistically, it would be hard to create three compact majority Latino wards when only 16.3% of the voting age population in the entire city is Latino.
Exactly. And the court actually pointed out that the plaintiffs kind of overlooked influence districts.
Okay.
So in Aurora, the court identified wards 1, 3, 4, and 6 as having a lot of Latino voters,
yeah,
even though they didn't have a Latino majority. So in these districts, Latino voters could still be really important in elections, even if they aren't the majority.
So it's not just about whether a district has a majority of minority voters.
No.
It's about their ability to influence elections in other districts.
Right. It's about the totality of the circumstances.
Okay.
These influence districts show that the minority group isn't completely shut out of the political process, you know, even if they don't control every election.
Right.
And in Gonzales, the plaintiffs didn't really compare Aurora's ward map to what a race-neutral map would look like.
Okay, so this idea of influence districts versus majority-minority districts, it seems really important in this area of the law.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about why courts look at both?
Sure. So a majority-minority district is where a minority group is the majority of voters.
Right.
So they're more likely to elect someone they want.
Got it.
An influence district is where the minority group isn't the majority.
Yeah.
But they still have enough people to influence the election, maybe by being the swing vote or being part of a winning coalition.
I see.
Courts look at both because Section 2 is about preventing the weakening of minority voting strength, and that strength can show up in different ways.
Right. It's not just about having a majority in one specific district.
Exactly.
Now, the court in this case suggested a really interesting method for making that race-neutral baseline you were talking about.
They did, yeah. The Seventh Circuit brought up the idea of using computer simulations to make a bunch of different redistricting maps.
Right.
These simulations would use neutral criteria, so things like making sure each district has about the same number of people,
right,
keeping districts compact, respecting existing political boundaries, all without considering race.
Got it.
And by looking at all these simulated race-neutral maps, courts could see if the map being challenged is much worse for minority voters than a map drawn fairly.
That makes sense.
To understand how these simulations work, it helps to know they often use algorithms that take geographic and population data.
Right.
To make lots of possible district combinations based on those neutral rules.
That's a really cool approach. So instead of just having the plaintiffs come up with maps they think are better, the focus is on whether the current map is putting minority voters at a disadvantage compared to these computer-generated maps.
Exactly. And this goes back to a key point the court made. Section 2 prevents dilution, not failure to maximize representation.
Right.
It's about making sure everyone has an equal chance to participate, not guaranteeing a certain number of seats just because of someone's race.
Okay, so what are the main takeaways for future voting rights cases, considering Gonzales versus Aurora and this focus on a race-neutral baseline?
Well, for people bringing these cases, they have to do more than just offer maps that might give minorities more representation.
Right.
They need to actually show that the current map weakens minority voting strength compared to a fairly drawn map.
Okay.
And the court's suggestion about computer simulations, it really shows how technology and expert analysis are becoming more important in these cases.
How does this approach with the race-neutral baseline compare to what other courts are doing across the country?
That's a great question. And the law is still developing in this area. The Seventh Circuit's focus on a race-neutral baseline and simulations, it's not necessarily what every court does. There's a lot of discussion about the best and fairest way to measure vote dilution. Some people argue that if you focus too much on a hypothetical race-neutral map, you might miss how historical and current systemic barriers still affect minority voters.
It's interesting. At the time of this case, only 2 out of 12 aldermen in Aurora were Hispanic.
Right.
Even though Hispanic voters were 16.3% of the voting age population. So, you know, you could look at that and think their voting power was being diluted.
Yeah, it's a natural thought, and it comes up a lot in these cases. But the court said that Section 2 doesn't require proportional representation.
Right, right.
The main question is whether everyone has an equal opportunity to vote, not whether the election results perfectly match the city's demographics.
Okay.
And those influence districts we talked about, even though they don't guarantee Latino candidates will always win, they do show that Latino voters have some power in the current system.
Okay, so let's recap some of the key points.
Sure.
The totality of circumstances. Test, how did those specific wards, wards 1, 3, 4, and 6, play into that?
Those wards, even without a Latino majority, were seen as places where Latino voters could affect election outcomes.
Okay.
You know, maybe by working with other groups or being the swing vote.
Right.
The fact that these influence districts existed, it worked against the plaintiff's argument that voting power was being diluted across the whole city.
And why did the court say that making three compact majority Latino wards wouldn't really work with a 16.3% Latino voting age population?
Basically, if you have a minority population that's spread out and they aren't a big percentage of the total voters, you can't easily put them into multiple districts where they'd be the majority.
Right.
You know, and you have to keep districts compact and respect community boundaries.
Okay.
So it's tough to make multiple majority minority districts when the minority is a smaller part of the overall voting population.
Okay. So the plaintiffs focused a lot on Ward 7.
They did.
Do you think that hurt their case?
Well, it might have. By focusing so much on Ward 7, they might have downplayed how much influence Latino voters already had in those other wards.
Okay.
Their argument didn't really cover the whole map, considering those influence districts.
Right.
And they didn't compare it to a race-neutral map, which the court thought was important.
Okay, let's talk about some common misconceptions.
Sure.
A lot of people think Section 2 guarantees proportional representation, right?
Right. That's a big one. People think it means a group should get a certain number of seats based on their percentage of the population.
Yeah.
But that's not really what the VRA is about. It's about making sure things are fair.
Right.
It's about whether a map is worse for minority voters than a map drawn without considering race at all.
Okay. And the plaintiffs didn't really challenge those at-large city council seats.
That's interesting, right? Because with at-large seats, minority voters might still have ways to elect people they want, even if they aren't the majority in any single district. So maybe the plaintiffs were more focused on controlling individual districts than looking at the whole system.
Okay, so to wrap up, Gonzalez versus Aurora shows us that these Section 2 cases are really complicated.
They are.
You need to understand the data, the legal precedents, and how redistricting actually works.
Absolutely. And Gonzalez shows the tension between wanting more minority representation and making sure everyone has an equal chance to vote.
Right.
For people thinking about bringing these cases in the future, they need to be really careful about what they compare the map to, and they need to have strong evidence, not just alternative maps.
One last thought for our listeners. The court really emphasized a race-neutral baseline and using simulations to figure that out.
Right.
So how do you think this will affect how people approach these cases in the future? What are some of the ethical things to consider when you're using technology to analyze these maps?
Yeah, there are a lot of layers to that.
Definitely something to think about as you continue learning about the law. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.